This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 46 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show today is Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
Waiting for spring to arrive. And I think that spring is about it's either weeks or months away, depending upon how you look at this winter.
Well, we still have about 2 feet of snow here in New Hampshire, so I don't know. It can't come soon enough for me. I have a shout out today to one of our listeners, and he mentioned on our Facebook page that he did his first Princess Half Marathon, and he was thanking us for all the help that we gave him on the podcast. So his name is Adam Pitzer. And Adam, congratulations. We hope it's the first of many Run Disney events and running events in general.
Good luck. Also joining us on today's show to help us answer questions is Dr. Dominic Abram from Roseville, Minnesota. How you doing, Dominic?
Pretty good. How are you two?
Doing okay. And it's nice that we've got three people from the great North America cold land. So we're all probably
and you're surrounded by doctors tonight, Mike.
Surrounded by doctors, you know, I've got this pain, by the way, you know.
Not that type of doctor.
Not that kind of doctor.
Okay. Well, it's one of those shows where we're answering questions, and that's why we brought on Dominic to help us. So are you guys ready to start tackling these questions?
Can we have Dom just tell a little bit about his running background? I think that
no,
would be helpful.
Of course. Of course. Dom, why don't you tell us about your legacy?
Because we didn't just call a random guy on Skype.
That's true.
We've known Dom for a while.
We just found Dom. Please, Dom's probably run more. I know he's run more races than I have. Go ahead, Dom.
Sure. These two folks just kind of called and said, you know, anything at all about running? And I said, yeah, I suppose. I've been running for 10 years. I started as an adult. And I've run seven Disney marathons, three other marathons, a whole bunch of halves. I've run 10Ks, 5Ks. In fact, I ran Disney 10K back when it was the Disney 10K Classic. That kind of dates me a bit. And I've also run Race for the Taste before they ended that. My wife also runs, too. She just completed her first full marathon this past January, along with Michelle.
Woo-hoo!
And I've really been fairly interested in Disney races due to the atmosphere when you're running down there, the fact that it's not running in Minnesota in the winter, that's always a huge bonus. And I'm really glad to be on the show. Hope I can help out with any of the questions we have.
We're sure you'll be able to.
And I second that emotion. Well, let's start off with the first question. And guess what? It comes from Wisconsin, a neighbor, Dom. And it's from Brian Marks, who hails from Wisconsin. And he says, I love the podcast. I'm so glad I found it. I'm in the process of training for the full marathon in 2014. I was doing 5Ks and a few 10Ks, but got a bad case of shin splints and was in physical therapy for the past 3 months. I have my first 5K since physical therapy this weekend. I have a 10K scheduled for the end of March and a half marathon scheduled for June. I am using the Disney training plan for the half marathon and just adjusted the date for the June half. Week one starts tomorrow. Any suggestions for running if you get a blister because you wore dress shoes for a nice dinner at Disney? Laughing out loud. Can I try to run or should I wait till it's gone? Any suggestions are great. By the way, I am also a teacher. Hope you have a great day. Thanks again.
Yay, so, for teachers.
So he has a half marathon scheduled for June. I don't know if it's the beginning of June or the end of June. He's starting his half marathon training tomorrow. He has a blister. What do you guys think? Michelle?
Dom, go ahead.
Dom, anything?
I would take the first couple of weeks slow with that blister, mainly because if it to hurt too much you will start changing how your gait is. And with this being March and the race in June, he doesn't have a ton of time to try to get back up and running, especially with the shin splints. I haven't really had shin splints much in my running career. I've had it sometimes where my shins are sore, and even then it was really painful to run. So what I would suggest is moderate what your expectations are on that half marathon in terms of just run to complete it. Make sure that you feel comfortable about how that training is going. And if you're getting blisters, try to find some root causes. It could be socks. It could be shoes. It could be running style. Now, you're not going to want to change your running style in 3 months, but just be really aware of what your body's telling you as you're going through that training, and just take it a little easier. A June half marathon, even up here, I suspect it's somewhere near him in Wisconsin, be hot and humid. I've run marathons and half marathons in June here where it's been really hot and humid. And just like in January down in Florida, you're just going to have to take your time. Just be really patient and kind of pace yourself, not only in your training and your race, and then you probably should be fine. We'd like to hear how it worked out for you.
That's good advice, Don. The first thing I was going to say also was take it easy. I think working on the cardio is important at this point. Maybe doing an elliptical where it doesn't really affect the blister, or doing a stationary bike, anything to get your wind up, to get your cardio in. The blister, you have to take it easy. Maybe in 2 weeks it's gone. If you just take care of it. You mentioned the shoes and the socks. Blisters are caused by, to me, I've always thought that blisters are caused by loose socks rubbing in moisture. So anything you can do to eliminate those, I think, will help. You're right. June is not quite right around the corner, but if you're training for a half marathon, it's almost right around the corner. I think that since Brian has an experience doing some 10Ks, he knows what 6 miles is like. And Brian, my guess is that if you can get up to 9 miles by about a week or two before that half, I think that, you know, you might be there. Don't worry about trying to do the whole 13 before that day, because sometimes the adrenaline will add that 3 miles of energy to you. So good luck, and let us know how you make out. Okay, moving to the second question. It comes from Mike Diamas, and Mike says, "Hello all, I've finished the last 4 Disney World half marathons, and I'm starting to wonder about taking on my first full marathon in 2014. I have race walked my 4 half marathons and have avoided getting swept by the skin of my teeth. Is the full marathon a realistic goal? Should I stick with the half distance? I was going to use the Galloway training program to increase my speed some, but I'm concerned about keeping up the pace for 26.2 miles. Any advice you have would be appreciated. Thanks, and keep up the great podcast." Michelle, I'm going to turn to you first, because you most recently have made that leap from half marathon to full marathon. So can you speak to Mike's concern about keeping the pace and if it's a realistic goal?
Sure. Well, congratulations, Mike, because I think doing 4 half marathons is terrific. So you should give yourself a huge pat on the back. And I think that what I noticed when I did the half marathon relay in 2012 and then the marathon, is that there are plenty of people who are walking. And so you can definitely walk the marathon. What I think is that you have to be concerned with your, or pay close attention to your training runs or your training walks. So if you can do a 16-minute mile for 20 miles, 17 miles, then you should definitely be able to keep it up for the marathon. But if it's something that you're struggling with, then maybe you need to reconsider and maybe wait a little bit. I think that for me, those training runs were when it proved to me that I could do it. So I knew it changes when you move from 13 to 26 miles. That I think your confidence is different, and I think it's great to have many half marathons underneath your belt. But I think when you start to move from 17 to 20, you'll see what happens to your pace. Maybe you're going to be steady, maybe your pace will decrease, or maybe you know, it will increase. So I think that's going to be the indicator whether or not you can move, keep up the pace of those later, you know, those lengthier training runs. What do you think, Dom?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it really helps that he's got the experience of doing the races at Disney. So the kind of anticipation or, you know, the worrying about what the experience is like is not going to be there for him. So we really can focus on the training, what it's going to take to make that next leap. And if you feel that you can keep up that 16-minute mile pace during your training, you should be okay to be able to complete. You'll have plenty of support as you go through the race, as you well know. And I think that it's certainly worth a shot. It's not going to hurt to try, so you might as well go for it at some point. Might as well be next year.
Yeah, you have to make that leap sooner or later. And the only other advice I can give to you, Mike, is that if you have an opportunity to, because I've thought of this myself in training for a full, if there along the way of your training, if there is a distance that you can, if there's a race distance that that a race is offering that's somewhere between a half and a full, I want to say 20K, I'm not sure about that, if that's possible, maybe 25K, then I would do that. Try to make an adjustment, or not an adjustment. Try to make small leaps. Going from a half, going from 10K to a half, is a leap. But going from a half to a full is a huge leap. So just be careful in your training and let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, I like that idea of trying some local races too that are those distances.
Yeah. You're doubling. It's not like you're doubling 6 to 13. You're doubling 12. You're doubling 13 to 26.
Would you agree, though, Dom, that like psychologically and confidence-wise that those training runs when you get up to, you know, 17, 20 will really tell you if you can do it?
Yes, most definitely. If you can do a 20 and feel, you know, reasonably human even a couple hours later, you're probably going to make that last 6 miles, especially at Disney, where that last 6 miles has so many people that can help get you through it, through the crowd and through the other runners and the volunteers. If you can make it 20 on a training run, you should be fine for the race.
And the goal here, again, is to finish and finish healthy. All right, our next question. And, you know, guys, I think I can take this one all by myself because I did some research on this. Well, I don't know if I call it research. But
You go, guy.
All right. It comes from Jeff Franciski, and Jeff asks, what are the race dates of the 2014 races that have yet to occur in 2013, like the Tower 10 Miler or Wine and Dine? We are planning our 2014 WDW vacations. Okay, Jeff, well, some of them have already been announced, and what I'll do is I'll turn to Michelle to give you and everybody the official 2014 dates that have been announced. Michelle?
Right. So our resource here is always Run Disney, and you can sign up and get updates from Run Disney. Everybody who's interested should definitely do that. So the marathon weekend in January next year, 2014, is January 9th through 12th. The Tinkerbell half marathon weekend in Disneyland is January 17th through 19th. And it's a week later the way it was this year. And the Princess for next year is February 21st through 23rd, 2014. But, Mike, I think he's interested in races later in the year in 2014. So,
well, yeah. So we're going to take a stab and see how close we come to those. My guess, Michelle, is that Expedition Everest Challenge will probably take place during the weekend of May 3rd. My guess is that the Disneyland half marathon will take place during the weekend of September 6th. As far as the Tower of Terror 10 miler, I'm guessing it's going to be the weekend of October 3rd. And finally, the Wine and Dine half marathon weekend, I'm going to take a stab and say it will be on the weekend of November 14th. So again, with these, those are unofficial. Those are not Run Disney's dates that I've given you. Those are the ones that we think, according historically speaking, that's about the time of year, time of month that those will be taking place. So Jeff, write those down, and we'll see what happens. Our next question comes from a dear friend of ours from Orlando. It's Eulady Rodriguez. We saw Eulady last week.
Yeah, she's on Team Studio Central.
Yes, she is. Yay. She says, "Hi, Mickey Miles. I am new to running. Well, run walking. I started in January of 2012 to train for the Royal Family 5K in February. After that, I signed up for the Tower of Terror 10-miler in 2012 and then for the Princess Half Marathon in 2013. So you can say that I haven't stopped training ever since I started. Now I'm signed up with my wonderful daughter for the Expedition Everest Challenge. That's only a 5K, and don't plan on doing any long-distance running until maybe the Wine and Dine Half Marathon in November. So here's my question. What do you recommend I do to not lose the endurance I have now? Should I stick to 3 times a week, short runs, 2 or 3 miles, and a long run every 2 weeks? What should the mileage be on those long runs? Thanks for all your information." Dom, I'm going to turn to you because I know that over the course of a year, you're always participating in a lot of long distance races. So what do you do in between races? What kind of a training regimen do you follow in between long races?
What I tend to do is make sure that my long runs don't drop below a certain level. So for me, I try to do at least 10, 12 miles and then more, depending on what race is coming up. During the week, I do run. So I actually run right now 4 to 5 times a week. If you want to run 3 days a week, make sure one of them is a long, whatever longer means for you, depending on the distance. And then the other times you run should be about the distance. So like you should run at least a 5K, if not more. So at least 3-4 miles. Doing that will keep that endurance and that stamina going, but it'll also keep your body used to that distance. So as she wants to progress closer to the race, she may want to do a few more miles, but I always try to do, you know, roughly half of what I was training for a marathon as my lowest mileage week in any given week during the training. And because I do race, you know, several times a year, I find that that's worked out really well for me.
And I try to keep my, I kind of, for my base for a half marathon, I would agree with everything that you said, Don, but I do 2 runs of 3 to 4 miles a week, and I do other things too. I do strength training and I do tennis on other days, but I try to do a long run every Saturday, you lady, and I try to keep my base of 6 to 7 miles if I'm training for a half marathon, which is mostly what I'm training for since I've only done one. So I agree that it's a good idea to keep that base up. But I think if you go on Run Disney and look at the Galloway program, it will kind of back it up for you and look to see if you want to start fresh when you can start training for the, is she doing the Tower of Terror? Oh no, she's doing the Wine and Dine. So it will back it up, and I bet it'll start asking you to train in maybe July or August. So you should take a peek and see. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think I echo both your thoughts. I think that it's important to keep a certain base. And I think that everyone who does 2 or 3 half, at least half marathons a year, try to do a long run maybe once a week, depending upon. But the thing is that the definition of long is different for everybody's standpoint. I like Dom's plan of, and I do this too. If I run 2 times during the week for about an hour, and then on the weekends I'll do a long run, maybe 1.5, 2 hours or whatever, just to keep that conditioning up. So I think that we all pretty much are on the same side, same page. So yeah. You lady, keep us posted.
And I just wanted to say too that for me, Saturday, I have it blocked out. That's my sacred long run time. So I try not to put anything else in my calendar for that time. I just make sure that I'm committed to that. If I don't do anything else, I'm committed to that long run on Saturday. So it takes some doing, but you can do it, you lady. And good luck to you and Stephanie on the Expedition Everest Challenge.
Yeah, some people who are non-runners sometimes look at runners as being committed or should be committed. So anyways.
Bada bing.
Bada bing, bada bing. Okay, we have a long letter from Tammy Burkett Kubis, and what I'm going to do Michelle and Dominic, is that as I get to each one of these questions, I will stop reading the letter and we will address it. So here we go. Hey, Mouseketeers, I am so happy to have found your podcast. It's very well done and super informative. It's great to be able to learn about the ins and outs of the races ahead of time. Some things that you've said have really stuck with me. I've loved Disney for as long as I can remember, and I never ran in my life before July 2012. I was inspired on my trip in January 2012 to run the half in January 2014. I was going to focus on losing weight in 2012, so racing in 2013 was too soon. I joined a weight loss program and decided that running was going to be the exercise that helped me get and keep the weight off. I started Couch to 5K in July 2012 and have run a 5K race every month since October 2012. I like having a race to be accountable to. I lost 57 pounds, good for you, Tammy, to reach my goal weight in December 2012. 2013 will be my year of training for the January 2014 half. I want that duck. It will be my first marathon. My mom and I are going to run our first Disney race in May, Expedition Everest Challenge. I thought it would be a nice way to get my feet wet. We are staying at the Art of Animation, which is not a host hotel. So here's her first question. Should we rent a car, take cabs, or plan in extra time to take Disney transportation to the expo and the race event and getting back to our hotel after the party? Michelle, do you want to go first on this one?
Oh, Mike, you know what? I'm going to volley it back to you because you are the rental. I know out of anybody I know, you have an opinion on this, and you are the rental car expert. So don't you agree, Dom?
Yeah, I rely on the buses, so we'll leave it to Mike for this one.
Okay.
Okay. Because it's your first race, I'm going to say, I bet Dom and Michelle knew what I was going to say. I'm going to say rent a car. I'm saying rent a car because then you are in control of your time. You are, you'll have confidence in controlling when you're going to leave your schedule. It'll give you a relief to know that you have reliable transportation. You don't have to worry about the bus. You will be looking at a nighttime race. And I used the word race loosely. It is going to be we received questions on buses after the party or whatever. And I think that having your own car gives you a little bit more flexibility when you can leave, when you can, how long you can stay. And I think you'll enjoy your experience that way. So my first preference would be for car. And I've with one exception, I think one wine and dine race, maybe. I pretty much have taken my car all the time, and I prefer that.
And if you think about that, race is starting at 10 p.m., and so it'll be over at about 11 p.m. maybe, and then the party's after that. So say you stay 2 hours at the party. For me, I'd rather take a car back than wait for a bus at 1 o'clock in the morning. But
yeah. Okay. Well, Michelle, this next one's going to be for you. Now for the thing that has me losing sleep at night, being swept. Michelle said that 5K races aren't timed, but the Run Disney site states that you must keep a 16-minute pace. I know that Michelle's time for the 5K she just did was a little over an hour. What's the real deal? What's the real deal, Michelle?
Well, Disney has to tell you that it's a 16-minute pace because they don't want people doing it at a 27-minute per mile pace. But it is, I think that you should plan on trying to do 16 to 17-minute mile pace, but especially because it's a nighttime race, I think there's going to be a lot of flexibility here. You shouldn't lose sleep, especially if you've done 5Ks. It sounds like you're doing them every month. You've lost a great deal of weight. So I think you'll be fine. Don't worry, unless you're way, way off that 16-minute pace. But what I would suggest if you're concerned is to try to move, when you get into your corral, to move your way up, you know, casually move your way up to the front of the corral. Hopefully you'll be in a high enough letter that you can start quickly, you know, A, B, or C. And Mike and I just witnessed the Royal Family 5K, and again, we have to stress it was very, very casual. It is a fun race, and this Expedition Everest Challenge is a fun race as well. It's a family race, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Dom, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's one of the few races I haven't done yet, so I'll defer to you guys on that one.
We haven't done it either, but we're just talking about 5Ks in general.
I think that this keeps coming back, and I don't see the Expedition Everest Challenge as a race. I see it more as a little bit of a combination of a scavenger hunt and puzzle solving and maybe a stroll through the park. I think what Michelle said is right. I mean, the Run Disney officials want you to keep moving for sure.
Well, you know, the thing about the other 5Ks, too, is they happen in the morning before the parks open, and this one is going to be after the parks close. So I think there's less urgency to get people off the race course. Again, I don't think they want you to be doing a 30-minute mile, but I think there's less of a, you know, there's no park to be opened and people to be coming into the park that they have to worry about.
Right. Everything takes place in the park, so that takes care of that one. So you should be okay. Okay, so moving along with Tammy's questions, she says, I know the official sweep time does not start until the last person crosses the start line. Will running in the Expedition Everest Challenge 5K help me with my corral placement for the half marathon? I heard it was based on when you signed up, not past race times. I'll start off on this one. From what I've seen in my experience is that your placement in the corral, your corral placement is based on your times within the last 2 to 3 years, your best time that you would report based on a 10K or higher. I don't believe 5Ks make a difference. You could certainly post it, but from what I have seen, I believe that it's at least a 10K race that they're looking for to give a credible indication regarding what your race pace would be for a half marathon. Dawn, Michelle?
That sounds about right to me.
That's exactly right. So the you will not move up in your corral for anything less than a 10K time that's recorded. In fact, one of the things that I'm doing is local 10Ks to see if I can move up in my corral. I have one scheduled for April. But running the 5K challenge, since it's not timed, it won't help you for your corral placement for the half marathon. You have to run a 10K or another half marathon. So I would look around in your area and see if you can do a 10K somewhere. And then what you're going to do is you're going to print out that time and either report it when you do your half marathon, sign up for your half marathon, or bring it to the expo and they will change your race corral.
Good advice. We're going to finish Tammy's letter with her last paragraph in question. And she says, finally, something on the happier side, a spa day. Would you suggest a massage before or after a race or at all? How many days before or after? I thought it would be nice to get one a few days after the half marathon to help with any aches and pains. But if before would be helpful, then maybe I should do both. Is it possible for massage to hurt my performance in some way? Have a magical day. Well, I know one of the three of us had a massage the day before a half marathon recently, and Michelle, why don't you chime in on this?
I can chime in, and I've had them afterwards. So for the first time, Tammy, I decided at the expo to get a massage. They have Florida Hospital at the expo, and they offer massages $1 a minute. So I had a 25-minute massage on my Achilles and my IT band, two things that are chronically bothering me. And I think it helped out a lot. I think it helped loosen up things, and I think it was good. However, I had to be very specific with the person because I have an issue with a toenail falling off. So I had to say, please don't touch my feet. And so I think if you're very open and communicative with the person who's massaging you and tell them not to do too deep of a tissue massage, because I have had massages, sports massages, where it's so deep that I've had some bruises the next day. So I think if it's just a light massage before, you're fine. I have had them afterwards when I've returned home a few days after a race, and they are wonderful. So they help me out a lot. But I think before, you just can't, you have to make sure that you don't overdo it. I think another thing that a massage can do is to help calm your nerves if you're a little worried about your race. It's kind of calming. But when you get one at the expo, it's not like there's pan music like there are in some massages, but you're hearing lots of people in the expo and people are walking by. Not that they're gawking at you, but it's a different experience than going to your local spa. So I would say yes on both of them. I'll never turn down a massage, but just make sure that you're very communicative and tell them exactly what areas are bothering you and to kind of keep it light. Dom, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to do it. I've never had it done. My wife has, and I think just like you, Michelle, it benefited her quite a bit. So I have heard that once you've had one, you don't ever really turn them down. So
that's true.
I would agree with you then.
Okay, we have one last question, and it comes from Ashley, who hails from West Virginia. And she says, "Hey, Mike and Michelle, I have a quick question about running gear. Our part of the country will soon be getting pretty frequent spring rains. So I will need to do runs in the rain. Do you have a suggestion for a good rain jacket, preferably with a hood? I would love to find a jacket that will keep me somewhat dry, but that won't make me so hot that I feel like a human terrarium. Any ideas?" Thanks so much for the podcast. I have been listening since the beginning, and you motivate me to keep up my training with every podcast. So, Michelle, we reached out to our expert in running gear, Helen Dunn. And she told us that that the good rain running jackets are very, very expensive.
That's right.
And she suggested that anyone who is in the market for one should be looking for venting and bungees to close the wrists and the hood. Helen also mentioned that she receives a certain magazine, Gear Guide, and she said that they have been pushing something called the Adidas Outdoor Terex Zupa Light jacket that, quote, sheds water like it's covered in wax and is, quote, the jacket I didn't know I needed but can't live without. It's $149.
Yeah,
so they're real expensive.
I've looked at, I don't have a good one either, but I've had my eye on one from Nike, has a new one out for women with a hood, and also Brooks has them. So maybe people on our Facebook page can recommend. But Dom, what about you? Do you have one?
Yeah, actually I have a Brooks with a hood that's incredibly light, and it does keep the rain off. The drawback, I think, is that if it's a certain temperature range, you do indeed feel like a human terrarium. So it depends on the temperature when you're running. But Adidas, Brooks, Saucony, they all put out really good running gear now. It's getting better and better with better materials. They're getting lighter, which is really key. And most of them have hoods that you can fold up and zip up or Velcro up when you're not using that hood. So we actually take the Brooks coats with us into the parks, just in case we don't use ponchos, we use the coats. So
yeah,
I think it's good.
Brooks has become a real favorite of mine. I think Brooks and Nike are my favorite. But they're very light, but they're super, super expensive.
Yeah.
Aren't they? I mean, do you find that, Dom?
Yeah, I do. The way I look at it is if it's built of really good materials and it lasts for several years before it either gets worn out or ripped or potentially somehow or I outgrow it somehow, it's a good investment. I'm one that doesn't like to be miserable when I run, so I try to.
Oh, I'd love to be miserable when I run.
Well, I know a few people that mind going out and, you know, hardly anything, getting soaked to the bone, but I can't I can't do that. So, yeah, they are expensive, but, you know, it's one of those deals, you get what you pay for. And if you feel like you're going to run enough in your life that you want to invest in it, I would go ahead. Otherwise, there are some other, you know, other options too. You know, garbage bags are always a useful option.
Yeah. Yeah, the when the running craze took off, the company that was first in doing the rainproof jackets was Gore-Tex. And Gore-Tex has been around for a long time, and their jackets are real expensive. But actually, if you go over to Roadrunner Sports, it's www.roadrunnersports.com, you might find some rain jackets there with hoods for under $100. So good luck, and let us know how you make out. And,
oh, Mike, I just want to say, if we're plugging places to buy running things, I also use Running Warehouse.
Okay.
I like Running Warehouse. What about you, Dom? Where do you get your gear?
Either REI or Roadrunner.
Great.
REI. I have yet to be in one of those stores. It's like Whole Foods, I guess. If I go in, I'll spend a lot of money. Actually, while we were talking, there's been another question that has come in, and it is our last question. Famous last words from me. It is our last question. It comes from Brian from Londonderry, New Hampshire. And Brian says, I'm training for the 2014 Disney World Half Marathon. Is there a hotel that is considered the best to stay at for race weekend that is close to the race, short bus ride to the start, or from the finish, special amenities? I love the podcast, and I'm sometimes disappointed when I have listened to all of the episodes and I'm forced to listen to music. Okay.
That's like two towns away from me. Yay, Londonderry. Yeah.
I don't know if there's a hotel that is considered the best. I guess it depends upon who you are, what your budget is. So let's go around the table. Dom, if you had to choose, if you could choose any hotel, regardless of the cost, which hotel would you stay at for the Walt Disney World Half Marathon, Walt Disney World Marathon weekend?
Yeah, I'm a Boardwalk guy. So Boardwalk, Beach Club, Yacht Club, any of those are great. If you do have, I have stayed at Pop Century too, and that's also, you know, if you do have a budget, that's a really good one too. It seems like the buses get around pretty easily for the expo and for the race. So either Boardwalk or Pop.
Michelle?
Well, I'm Disney Vacation Club, and I always stay at Beach Club. I've already made my reservations for next year, so I agree. I like being around Epcot. I like even just around race days, being close to the International Gateway, being able to go in and out. And it's nice to use points and not to have to, you know, have to put up the cash for that weekend. But if I were putting up the cash, I know a lot of runners who like to stay at Port Orleans, French Quarter, or Riverside, and that's what would be my second choice.
Yeah, I think I've stayed at Beach Club, Pop Century, All Star, and I've stayed also at the Caribbean Beach Resort for a Princess Half Marathon. And I mean, it really, to me, it doesn't really matter because, again, I take my rental car, so it's about the same kind of a ride. I guess it's a little bit shorter if you're at the Beach Club, but I end up taking my car regardless of where I guess it depends upon my budget at the time, but I don't know if there is such a thing as a short bus ride, because I think it just waiting in line on race mornings just makes the whole bus ordeal a little bit longer. But I hope that answers your questions, Brian, and I believe that is the last question. Any last words from our special guest, Dom? Dom, any thoughts from these questions? Any last thoughts?
Just that it's really great to hear people, you know, maybe be their first, second race, something like that at Disney or in general. And just it's really great to hear that folks are getting more into the running, especially at Disney, where it is so much fun. And I hope to see everybody out on the race course.
Awesome. Thank you for coming, Dr. Abram. Michelle, last words from you?
No, I want to say thank you to Dom. I always learn a lot from him, and a huge congratulations to his wife, Laura, because like me, she trained for her first full, and she did it, so congratulations.
Yeah, Laura has made great strides the last couple of years. She has a good coach, too. So, for Dom Abrams, Michelle Scribner-McLean, This is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.